I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep us stuck. Smashing the Plateau is part of the Best Network, dedicated to supporting individual entrepreneurs who are experts in their field, but may not be an expert at running a business. Best Network is ideal if you are an expertise-driven solopreneur business owner with many years of experience in your field. If you are a consultant, coach, or professional selling your knowledge and creativity, we're here for you. If you join the Best Network, you'll receive access to the full Smashing the Plateau archive of over 350 episodes, and you'll receive expert individual and team mentorship, peer support, and curated educational content that reinforces and expands our goal of the show, helping you get your business the recurring revenue it deserves. With teams of like-minded and supportive professionals surrounding you, you'll be perfectly poised to smash the plateau in your business with our membership programs. To learn more about joining the Best Network and how to smash your plateau, go to smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. That's smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Jen Grace. Jen is a nationally recognized business strategist, speaker, and author. Guided by the mantra, change happens in business, Jen believes social change happens first in the workplace before spilling over into mainstream society. She's a best-selling author and has been featured in Forbes, The Huffington Post, The Hartford Courant, and CNBC. Passionate about helping people share their stories of adversity, Jen is the founder of the Authors Academy and Publish Your Purpose Press. A marathon runner, animal lover, and novice birder, she lives in Connecticut with her family. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. I'm happy to be here.
Jen, give us a little background on why you started your business.
Sure. So I will give you the abridged version, but basically I was working in a corporate environment, and in that corporate environment, I learned real quickly, and it happened to just be this particular environment, that being an out lesbian in that environment wasn't in my best interest. So I kind of had to bring myself back into the closet. And in working in, you know, just kind of a hostile work environment, to be perfectly honest, and this was about 15 years ago, I realized that I had an opportunity to use my voice to help other people in situations similar to the one that I was going through. So after a couple of years kind of dealing with that environment, I set out to be a consultant in the LGBTQ space. And I started doing that in about 2006 or so. So it's been over a decade that I've been focusing on helping corporations improve their workplace cultures. And that's really kind of where my mantra of change happens in business comes from, because I feel truly passionate about the fact that that is 100% the case. Businesses really have that power and ability to make an impact for many people in their communities, people who work for them, people who are served by them.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that was happening for about a decade. And then I realized I had more of an epiphany moment where I realized that I have been out there speaking and, you know, talking to thousands and thousands of people. And if I were the one behind the scenes helping other people, other thought leaders get on a stage or write their books or, you know, develop their thought leadership, then I have that power to make even more change. And that was kind of the catalyst for my founding of Publisher Purpose Press.
So, yeah, so it sounds like two major transitions and shifts. One, going from corporate to being a single person consultant. And the second, from being a consultant to being someone who is an enabler of lots of other people.
Yes, absolutely. And those are two very significant shifts. I didn't realize how much of a shift it would be going from that solopreneur mentality to having a staff of people. It's been over the last couple of years that I've been focusing on the publishing company, and it's been an interesting transition, to say the least.
Jen, what was it that helped you determine in both transitions what expertise you had that would be most beneficial as you essentially went to a new stage in business?
You know, I feel like I have a really high risk tolerance. And I think that that was a really kind of pivotal piece. And I don't necessarily know that I would call that a skill set, but I think that my knowing that the environment that I was in just wasn't healthy. It wasn't healthy emotionally, physically, mentally, in any way. And I knew that, you know, changing that environment and helping people was the right path for me. So, you know, a lot of things that I did during both of those transitions were doing skills assessments, trying to figure out, you know, how I worked with other people, what were my top skills. And what I was able to really identify is the fact that I am someone who likes to build things from the ground up. So, you know, you have different types of people where you have the, you know, the people that can get down and dirty and scrappy and kind of get it done. And then you have the people that can transition a business from, you know, like a $1 million business to a $50 million business. So I feel like my sweet spot's always been in that scrappy startup, helping, you know, helping my businesses grow, which has then kind of led to my business strategy of helping other people's businesses grow.
And what would you say are one or more of the nuggets that really need to be identified in order to figure out what it is that you can leverage? Because when you're talking about scaling the way you've just described, mm-hmm. from $1 million to $10 million or 10 to 50, whatever it is, or even zero to 100,000, there's some core that you want to be able to leverage, right?
Yes, I think it's systems and processes. And I feel like this might be a common answer, but I think that for any scalability, and this I think fully kind of goes into the crux of what you talk about on this, and that's the recurring revenue. And I think that the only way to get to that place is by having really solid systems in place and making sure that the people who are working with you and around you are actually following those processes. Because I think that, you know, to get to that first 100,000 takes one type of skill set. And then I think, you know, anything over that 100,000, and the metric might be different for different types of industries, but generally speaking, I think once you get to that certain place, everything is just putting more, feeding the machine more. So feeding more leads and business development opportunities into the system that you already have. And in that way, you're able to grow and scale your business, because there's no sense in kind of repeating, you know, the same things that may not be working or having an inefficient system. So I really think that that's where scalability and recurring revenue really can come into play, is if you have just a strong system in place.
So Jen, what mistakes did you make, or do you see other consultants make, when it comes to identifying what the system is that can be scaled, particularly when you're going from a single person consultant to something that is some scale bigger than what one person can produce and sell?
You know, I feel like the biggest one would probably be not delegating enough or not knowing what to delegate. Because I think that, you know, and I've been there where I was the solopreneur, solo consultant, and I still have these two businesses. I have the consulting business and I have the publishing business. And with the consulting business, it's something that I can, you know, I find myself struggling with even today, where I will have an opportunity that comes in and I just don't have the bandwidth to take care of that. And I think that it's something that a lot of people struggle with, where you have to know what can be delegated and what you have to do. And I feel like this is something that I hear on a lot of different podcasts, and you know, but I feel like I've learned firsthand experience that if you don't delegate and you try to do everything by yourself, you're just going to squash your ability to grow and scale that business. So I think it's harder than it might seem on the surface to like really figure out like what's that sweet spot, what makes you unique, what makes you you, and what makes people attracted to wanting to work with you. And I think if you can get to the crux of that information, everything else becomes more clear of what do I need to delegate and what do I have to get off my plate so I can remain in that unique brilliance place of what I do best.
And Jen, what have you found worked well for you? Like, what is it that you have found that you can delegate most effectively, and what is it you really are better off doing yourself?
You know, I believe for me, focusing on sales and business development and communications and anything where I am out there speaking about what we do, who we serve, how we do it, I find that that's really where my sweet spot is, even though I feel like I am equally a big picture thinker as I am a details person. But so even if I am good at doing the detailed work, I realize that that's the easiest thing for me to outsource is the all of just kind of the minutia that goes with running the business that I need to outsource and delegate because I need to focus on bringing in more revenue to the company, which then of course, you know, helps everybody that we're serving and internally the people that work with me. So that's something that I think can be challenging, though, especially if you have a lot of different skills. So if you have a lot of different skills, what I would say is that just look at the things that really make you happy and what makes you passionate. And I think the best way to figure these out is if you get in the zone. I always find that, you know, if you're sitting down and all of a sudden 3 hours have passed and you have no idea how that time went by so quickly, chances are you were in the zone during whatever that work was that you were doing. So that's probably the stuff that you wouldn't want to outsource. It's the stuff that you put off, you put it on your to-do list, and then 3 weeks later, it's still on the to-do list. And then a month, you know, 3 months, 4 months, and it's still there. That's the stuff that you should 100% be delegating.
Oh, that's a great tip. Jen, have you found that there are ways that you have been able to delegate without creating a big infrastructure?
That's a good question. I have tried a lot of different ways because I feel like it's so important to have that really clear system. I recently discovered a tool called Teamwork, and it seems to be, you know, it's kind of like a more robust system than like a Basecamp, which we've also used, or like Asana or Trello or all these different kind of communication tools. I think it's just a matter of finding that one tool and sticking with one tool. And that's what we're doing in our publishing company right now, is trying to streamline all communications because we do use Basecamp. We have our files in Dropbox. We have files in Google Drive. We use Google Documents. So there are files and communications going on in email as well, all different places. And so for us, we're realizing that for our team to grow and be the most effective, everyone has to be on the same page. So I can't have a call with one of our authors to do some kind of check-in if I don't know where our editor stands with the process, or I don't know where our project manager stands with that author. So the best way to do that is having one dashboard to keep track of all that. So regardless of what tool people are using, I would say just find one tool, even if it has some type of limitation to it that you're not a super fan of or you think might be a deal breaker. If it has like 85% of what you need, I would just go there and stick with that instead of trying to manage a lot of different systems, because I think a lot gets lost in translation. A lot gets missed when you're trying to manage multiple different project management tools.
Yeah, that's very true. Now, what do you do if you have major clients that have different systems than the one that you prefer to use internally?
We have that happen a lot, actually, especially with our authors, because we work with authors who are CEOs, they are thought leaders, they're speakers, they're, you know, out there doing a lot of different things. And they most often they have successful businesses. So they have some system and tool that they like. So what we do as a team is that we cater to what the author's needs and desires are as much as possible. So a lot of times we'll find ourselves using their tools and their systems, and we end up duplicating in some instances that information on our end. So we're using Teamwork. So, you know, we might have an author that's using Basecamp, which, you know, we're transitioning away from Basecamp, but we, at least our team knows how to use it. Or Google Drive seems to be something that a lot of our authors like. So we'll just put links and notes in our system to say, don't forget that such and such, you know, so-and-so author just wrote this, and put a link to wherever that might live. And that's something that our project manager does. So it's a little bit of duplicate effort, but for us, the experience that an author has with our company is the highest priority, even if that means there's a little bit of extra work on the back end for us.
That's great advice. Jen, was there a time when you were really battling the potential to delegate something because you were either afraid of the risk that was involved, or maybe there was some other feeling that was preventing you from delegating?
Yes. And I would say I've had many examples. The top one I can think of is that my sweet spot and just strength is marketing. I have Both my undergrad and graduate degrees are around marketing and communications. And that's something that I've always brought to the business strategy of the people that we work with, is really kind of looking objectively from all different types of marketing perspectives of how is this author, or in, you know, could be our LGBT consulting work, how are we serving this person best? And I, for a very long time, have always focused my strengths on coaching, because we do a lot of coaching in our company with authors. So I've always been a really good coach and a really good marketing strategist. And with our authors, and in building this publishing company that we're trying, you know, actively pursuing scaling, I can't be in those roles with all of our authors. And having that kind of epiphany of like, wow, these are the things that I love doing the most, is business strategy, marketing strategy, you know, coaching our authors through really tough times in the process, I realized that I can't do that by myself. So I was able to hire in coaches who could then kind of fill in that role that I was making. And then the place where I struggled was bringing in a marketing person who could then basically, so basically it took two people to replace me in our process, and just me in those roles, not necessarily as the CEO, but it was a struggle for me to feel like I could give up the reins to someone else to help our authors with their marketing. And it's not to say that I still am not involved in that part of the discussion, but I'm not the primary contact anymore. And that was a really hard thing, because I think a lot of it was wrapped around ego, if we're being really honest with your audience. You know, you have this, especially as the CEO, I think a lot of people have that feeling of like, well, I know the best, or I know the most, or, you know, I'd be the best suited for this. And that's not always the case. That's just our ego talking. And that was definitely a struggle for me. But fortunately, I found an incredible marketing person who has more experience than I do working with authors specifically. And it's been just a beautiful match. But it definitely took time. And it was a little bit of an internal struggle for me to get to.
Yeah. How long did it take you?
I want to say I was on my radar to do for probably about a year. And then when I found the person who, you know, we met through somebody else that's on my team, when I found her, I knew instantly that this is somebody that I can transition this stuff over to. So we worked together closely for a couple of months, just really transitioning at least our systems and processes internally, paired with her knowledge of author marketing. And then she was able to kind of go out on her own with oversight still from our team. But I feel really confident and trustworthy of what she's doing with our authors. But I guess in total, it probably was a little under a year, probably from idea of I have to outsource this to actually execution.
Yeah, no, so that's a fairly long time.
Yeah, yeah, it absolutely is.
Yes. So clearly it's something that you wrestled with. And what kinds of outcomes did you achieve as a result?
Well, the beautiful part is that I have more time in my day, which means I have more time to be talking to awesome podcast hosts like yourself, or I have time to be out networking and meeting more people and really amplifying the message of who our company is and what we stand for, versus being bogged down in the day-to-day weeds of what's going on with each individual author that we're working with. I still know, because my team updates me on all, like I can rattle off at any point where any one of our authors is in the process, but I am not solely responsible to carry that weight all by myself. And that alone is a really kind of freeing opportunity. And I think that's what a lot of people who are solopreneurs, you know, even just getting that 1099 contractor in that can help just give you that peace of mind of like, all right, someone else is here to brainstorm this idea with, or someone else is responsible, even though you ultimately have to keep them accountable, at least it's their responsibility. And I think that frees up a solopreneur's time significantly, which can then get to that scalability and the recurring revenue.
Right. And there are a lot of really talented people that you can bring on a subcontractor basis that I think many solopreneurs just don't kind of bite the bullet and look for those kinds of people and test them out.
Mm-hmm.
Also, with a 1099 relationship, it is fairly easy to test somebody new out on something relatively small and see how they do and see how the relationship develops.
That's how I've worked with most of the 1099 contractors I have. I actually am working with somebody right now that is the son of somebody that I worked with at a different consulting company. And I started off with just asking him if he could help me with some LinkedIn business development. And then from there, he was working on our podcast, and now he's doing like
some real good sales research and business development for us. And it was really just kind of saying, you know, can you give me 5 hours of your time? I just need 5 hours for you to help try to find this. And then he would do it really well. And it's like, well, if he's really on top of it, he's super efficient. He doesn't require a lot of direction. It's saving me time, which I think is the ultimate question you have to ask yourself. Is hiring this person actually saving you time? Chances are it will be yes eventually, but up front in the beginning, there's a lot of oversight and a lot of management, so it might not feel like it is, but it's kind of looking at that long-term range. And for him, you know, I'm really enjoying working with this person, and I'm hoping that we can continue to bring him on so he's really doing full-time hours for us at some point. But you have to start somewhere, and I think that that's probably where most of the people listening to this are, where you might just be yourself right now, and it's finding that one person. And it could be, just give me 5 hours of your time. Then it could be, give me 10 hours. And that could take, it could be years before you get to that place of hiring someone full time. But at least you're making those small methodical steps every day that are going toward that goal versus not doing anything at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jen, many solopreneurs, when they're shifting their business model from one that is, however they priced their offering, it's essentially a time for service model. Mm-hmm. And when they start to be really clear with themselves about what their repeatable system is, and they start bringing on some kind of help to deliver that system to their customers, they often struggle with how to price it because it's a very different kind of pricing model. And if you price it right, you can deliver great value to your customers and also increase your profitability considerably. What has your experience been making that kind of shift when it comes to pricing and profitability?
It's such an interesting question because if I use the publishing company as an example, we work with authors on, you know, like 6 to 8 month timeline. Sometimes it's a little bit more, sometimes it's a little bit less. And that has a certain profitability to it. And that requires a lot of my team. So the profitability on our publishing itself is not as great as I would like it to be, but it's pretty industry standard. So if we're looking at it from that way, that's where the kind of recurring revenue and the scalability comes into play, because I have a team of a certain size, and at some point they'll be hitting their threshold where we have to get more people that can help serve the needs of the business coming in. So that's kind of one angle to it. But then what we did, and it's actually the first program I started, which was our Authors Academy. And that's a 14-week program that is designed to show anyone how to self-publish their book on their own so they don't need to hire a company like ours. And that's a 14-week program where people can sign up for our live program. And when I was developing that, it was challenging to figure out the price point, to be perfectly honest. And it started in early 2016. The idea popped up in probably Q3 of 2015. And when I was looking at the pricing, I've made a lot of mistakes, and I think everyone has, but in this case, I was just looking at other online programs. Like, what were the price points of those programs at the time? And I just kind of somewhat arbitrarily chose a number based on what I was seeing other people do in the market, and being an online course participant myself, seeing what I've paid others for their expertise. And then over time, I had to refine that more because I was bringing in more experts who were helped to deliver this content. And I obviously have to pay those experts. So it changed kind of the pricing model. But even with all of that being said, there's a lot more profitability in a program that is repeatable over and over again, even if it requires someone to facilitate that program, versus a, you know, publishing, which has a lot of overhead because there's a lot of people involved, or even if we're looking at just consultants. You know, like, my consulting work to this day remains exceptionally profitable because very often it's just me going out, you know, doing a training, or me having one person on my team who helps manage all of just the back end of the business. So each of those three different things are all part of what bring revenue into our one larger company, but they all have very different price points and very different profit margins. So I think that for someone listening to this, knowing what your cost of sales are, I think that that's probably been the most critical thing I have done in my business, is to know exactly what my cost of sales for any single project that I do is. And I think that that's something that if you know that you're charging $10,000 for something and your cost is $5,000, just for that project, and then you have your overhead that's 30% or whatever it might be, that's a really good clear indicator of I need to do more of this or less of that, if you have those numbers black and white staring you in the face, because then you can avoid going down paths that aren't going to be productive because they're not going to be as profitable. And that was kind of the revelation that I was having of the Authors Academy really provides that profitable stream of business while we're focusing on, I don't want to say more meaningful, but in a lot of ways, working with our authors one-on-one, it's hard to kind of capture the amount of joy and passion that our team has by working with them. But that doesn't mean that it's going to be profitable. So it's kind of weighing a lot of different variables at once.
That's really great advice. Really great advice. Jen, whom do you know personally who's been really successful at smashing plateaus?
You know, I have a close friend of mine named Jennifer Brown. I think that she has done an incredible job at smashing plateaus, and she works in the diversity and inclusion space. She's near you in New York. And, you know, I think that she's just done an incredible job bringing kind of, I don't want to say the voice to the voiceless, because that seems a little bit too kind of corny or cliche, but really helping empower people and smashing the plateaus of figuring out how to do exactly what we've been talking about, going from a solopreneur 15 years ago to having a company with many consultants and many people working for her, all of whom are out there doing really good work for the benefit of kind of the larger community and workplace.
Sounds like a great example. Thanks for sharing that. I wondered if we could close out by you talking a little bit about who your ideal customers are and how you help them, and then what's coming up for you for the future.
Sure. So our ideal customers are solopreneurs, thought leaders, CEOs, people who are putting their thought leadership into the world. Consultants are very often people that we work with. And what they're trying to do is kind of figure out that scalability. They're trying to get new clients. They're trying to sell more books, or they have this dream of writing a book because everyone they work with says, you have to write a book, you have to write a book. So our focus, we have a lot of women authors that we work with, we have a lot of people of color that we work with, and we have a lot of LGBT people that we work with. That is not to exclude anyone else, but that seems to be a really good core of individuals. And I find that our team works really well with people who are coming from some place of adversity. It doesn't mean that they need to be writing about their adversity. They might be writing about, you know, any number of different topics as it relates to what their expertise is and what they're a subject matter expert in. But they're coming from some place where they're out to prove something. They have the grit, they have the stamina, they may have been marginalized in some way, shape, or form. And now they're out there to really get their thought leadership in the world, to help show people that might be younger than, that look like them, that there is a path to success for them. And that seems to be a really strong market of people that we work with. And, you know, it's incredible. I find that our average authors tend to be in their 40s and 50s, mostly women, again, people that are coming from some adverse background, but they're writing on all different topics. And I think that that's one of my most pleasurable things about having a publishing company, is the amount of things that I get to learn on any given author project that we're working on, because we get really entrenched in what they're doing, and we're helping them develop their speaker strategy. We're helping them figure out how they're going to use their book as it relates to their consulting business, how they're going to get, you know, the more speaking engagements from it, and how they're going to make sure that their book doesn't become a doorstop, but it really becomes a foundational piece in the fabric of their business from a strategic standpoint. So for someone who, you know, might be listening and they've thought about writing a book, I'm always happy to talk to somebody and just at least shed light on what different paths and opportunities exist, because the publishing industry, generally speaking, I say often, I feel is very predatory, unfortunately. So I like to help navigate people through that process as much as I can, even if that means them not working with us. You know, I would rather save somebody a lot of heartache and headache, even if that doesn't mean that they're going to publish with us, because we are kind of a specific boutique type of publishing company that works with really kind of purpose-driven, mission-driven, impact-driven, social, you know, social cause-driven type of individuals.
Sounds great. How can listeners learn more about you and get in touch with you?
They could go to our website, which is publishyourpurposepress.com, or they can definitely find me on LinkedIn. I'm really active on LinkedIn quite often. And we have a podcast called Publish Your Purpose, An Author's Journey. And that really is chronicling one of our authors that we started with back in June, from the idea of having a book in his head all the way to his book launch party. And it's a 25-episode series. So it's definitely, I think it's a good listen.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, thanks so much, Jen, for taking time to join us today. My guest today has been Jen Grace, the founder and CEO of Publish Your Purpose Press. Thank you again, Jen, for joining us.
Thank you, David.
I'm David Schreiner-Kahn. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, part of the Best Network, dedicated to supporting individual entrepreneurs who are experts in their field, but may not be an expert at running a business. If you're a solopreneur who's an expert in your field, but not necessarily smashing your plateau in business, and you want to ramp your recurring revenue, join our Best Network. Receive expert individual and team mentorship, peer support, and curated educational content that reinforces and expands on our goal of the show, helping you to get your business the recurring revenue it deserves. To learn more about joining the Best Network, go to smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. That's smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. Join us and smash your plateau.